everyone. Welcome to My Imposter Story. This is the podcast where authenticity meets vulnerability. I'm Laure Goubeau, your host. I'm an executive coach and talent consultant. I'm also a former lawyer and a longtime imposter. In each episode, we'll dive into the narratives of individuals who'll be sharing their stories of imposter syndrome and imposter thoughts. We'll explore their mental patterns, moments of self-doubt, and their fear of being exposed as a fraud, despite some pretty raging evidence of their abilities and achievements. Join me as we connect with our guests on the complexities of this universal experience. Let's get started. Hey, Joe, it's really good to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Joe, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Joe Fenty. On Instagram and TikTok, you can find me at Fenty Fried Chicken. I'm a comedian and content creator out of Boston. I also work in corporate America full time. And a lot of my comedy is about working in corporate America, living in Boston, and general sketch comedy. I'm 27 years old. I'm a straight white male, and that's kind of everything.
Hey, thanks, Joe. Listeners, just so that you know, like, I started following Joe not that long ago, but have always found his content super, super funny. And it's kind of neat. Like, Joe, you were telling me you've been at this on TikTok and Insta for 3 years. You've got over 200,000 followers on TikTok, about the same thing on Insta. And yeah, I've also been noticing, like, you've been getting some really good brand deals, you know, like, saw the one from McDonald's, Untuckit, Hulu, Amazon Prime. Like, that's kind of wild. And I also noticed, like, your recent video for Comedy Coop, where you're basically showing up, setting up a comedy club, and you get going. And I don't know, I think it's really, really impressive how you're managing, like, this super funny alternative career to corporate America and, like, becoming super successful at it. It's really cool, Joe.
Thank you. I mean, I have the creative bug and it won't go away, so I got to do something about it. And this is what it looks like.
Well, keep on going, because I always have a really good laugh.
Thank you. I'm glad.
So, Joe, I typically start the interview, this conversation about imposter syndrome, imposter thoughts, with rapid fire questions. So one means never and 10 means always. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's run it.
Okay. So Joe, I set really high standards for myself.
9.
I compare myself to others.
8.
Luck got me where I am now.
5.
The efforts of others got me where I am now.
4.
I experience fear of failure.
4.
External validation is important to me.
7 to 8.
And I'm an overachiever.
7 to 8.
Okay. How was that for you?
Yeah, you weren't kidding about it being rapid fire.
any thoughts coming up based on how you answered those questions?
Yeah, the idea of comparing myself to others it's such a double-edged sword, in that you're not supposed to be doing that in so many places, like looking at, other people's follower accounts or what their views are getting, because you're just going to run yourself into the ground if you're always comparing your content. And even the same with your stand-up career. Like, I tell a joke where my friend and I are standing with each other outside of a show, and this old man comes up to my friend and is like, "You are so wonderful. You're full of talent. Everything you do is genius." And then he kind of looked at me and he's like, "And you were pretty good too." So you can't always be the funniest for everyone, but it's a matter of making a few people really like you. And it's a hard hill to get over, because you want to be everyone's favorite. But I mean, think of all the TV shows and movies and music you consume. You're going to have different preferences, and that's what stand-up is going to be. It's an art form, same with content and everything in between. So you're not going to be everyone's cup of tea. Some people hate tea.
Yeah, totally. Tell me, have you experienced imposter thoughts as you've been growing in the comedy space?
Absolutely. I mean, I started doing stand-up way too early in that I had only done two open mics before I ever actually got on stage for a real show. I just got incredibly lucky in how it happened. Like, because I had a bit of a following on Instagram and TikTok, one showrunner reached out to me to just be an audience member at a stand-up club in Boston. And I replied, oh, I actually do this. Like, I could be on the show if you ever have a spot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then she said, okay, sure thing. Send me a tape and we can go from there. So what I did was held a stand-up comedy night in my apartment with my roommate. We were having a pregame as our last hurrah in our apartment.
Yeah.
And just like an hour and 15 minutes in, we were like, all right, everyone shut up. Joe and Connor are doing comedy. I'm recording this so I can send it to bookers. Let's have some fun. And I did a little tape of just 5 minutes of comedy, made it look like I was actually in a place, sent it to her. And she was like, oh yeah, you're good enough. Let's do it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So then I got to the show and the headliner was like, what's the comedy scene like here? And I had to just talk out of my ass saying like, yeah, you know, it's really good, I think.
Oh my God, Joe.
Yeah. But I mean, I got on stage. I had my jokes. Obviously, I packed the house with like all of my friends and family. I think there were 20 people there to see me because I was like, this is my first real show. I'm doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, ever since then, I was like, okay, there are people who've been doing this, you know, 5, 10, 15 years. And I was doing it for the third time ever.
But tell me, like, what's your version of imposter syndrome? Explain it to me in your own words.
Yeah, it's that feeling of like there's always one thing you can be doing better in stand-up, and the only way to get better at stand-up is just doing it. And you can tell someone who's been doing it 5, 10 years just because the way they hold themselves on stage, how they handle crowd work, how they even just hold the microphone. There are so many ways to show that you're a master of comedy. And I'm still finding myself doing things on stage where I'm like, oh, I'm showing my inexperience. I'm showing that I'm not getting up on stage as much as I should be. So sure, you can have jokes and minutes and be able to get stage time. But I feel like the imposter when I'm not as good as someone, when I'm further along in the lineup. Like, typically there'll be a host, an opener, a feature, and a headliner. And sometimes I've been the feature and I feel like I'm sometimes not better than that opener or the host.
Gotcha. That sounds like it stings a little.
It definitely can, but I always have to think maybe I'm really hitting it for some people in the audience. Like, I mean, like anything, if you enjoy my style of comedy, you're going to enjoy the whole set. If you don't, you'll be like, what is he talking about? I don't appreciate how he's only talking about his girlfriend for 10 minutes.
Yeah. But people believe in you, right? Like, you're getting the gigs.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think that I'm still good at the whole process of doing comedy. I just, it's that nagging bug to say, like, you could be getting better. You could be doing it more. Because there's no objective level of where you should be.
Right.
You know, it's a performance that you can make of it what you want, but you always want to be better. You always want to be writing crisper, cleaner jokes, just having a tighter set overall, making sure that your like C minus and B minus jokes are getting thrown out so you can leave in the A minuses and the A pluses.
Yeah.
But it's a hard exercise to do. It's very difficult to like look at the jokes you've written and spent time on and have performed a little bit and go, it's time to retire, you little buddy.
And how does this play out for you online, right? Because it's not that instant reaction. It's, I mean, instant in the sense that you're getting likes, but you're not getting booed or applauded as you would be on a live scene. So unpack that a little bit for us, imposter syndrome online.
Yeah, what's weird about online is that if you fail, no one sees it. Like, if you make a terrible video on TikTok or one that's not funny or engaging, no one sees it to a degree. Like, if you really screw up, you'll get a lot of attention.
Yeah.
But I think in what I'm doing, where a lot of the comedy I make is pretty dry, it's harder to poke fun at because it's self-aware. Like,
yeah.
I used to joke, what I love about doing deadpan comedy is that if you don't laugh, it just sounds like I'm talking.
Yeah.
And rather than I'm trying to make a joke. So in terms of failing, you can fail as much as you want. No one will really see it. It's where you start to get videos that do really well for you. That's where you hear the criticisms and the sort of boos. Like, I have a series where I write jokes in the voice of Mitch Hedberg. He was my favorite comedian in the world. It's a lot of non sequiturs and weird observationalist comedy. And I just wanted to keep that going. And the parts of the series that do the most well are then the ones that get the most people saying, like, this is a disgrace to Mitch Hedberg. These jokes suck. They wouldn't, he would have never told this garbage. And I'm like, oh, well, some people disagree.
I mean, in your case, it sounds like you are, like, you're really putting yourself out there, right? And it's like, I don't know, I don't want to assume anything, but probably a lot of intense moments of vulnerability. And so what keeps you going?
What keeps me going? It's, I don't know. When I get my head set on something, I can't really give it up until I get bored of it. And I'm not bored of this yet. It, like, all throughout college and high school, I felt like I was trying different little creative projects and giving them their due time, but then letting them go once it stopped serving me. So, like, in college, I produced 2 albums of, like, mashup songs. I wrote a collection of short stories and got it self-published. But those sort of hobbies kind of fell by the wayside and was like, all right, I feel like I've done enough in this space, or it's not really exciting me as it used to. But comedy has always been that itch where I'm like, there's always another thing to come up with. There's always a new angle or a new joke or even just a silly observation. There's no real driving force other than I like to be creative, and the external validation of someone saying that was funny or that was smart or that was creative, that's really what I'm trying to do. And it's amazing to hear it back.
Yeah. Yeah. And how's the community, right? Like, 'cause I'm pretty certain that you're not the only one who at one point or another is experiencing imposter thoughts. So
yeah.
How does that work? Like, what's the behind the scenes? How's the community? Do you all help each other out? Like, how, paint that picture for us.
Yeah, definitely in the online creator community, I've felt very supported. They're very rarely, it seems like if you do a similar thing or have a similar style of content, people are very willing to work with you and help you out. Like, there's been a ton of creators who have reached out to me being like, hey, I love your stuff. Let's make a video together. And then we produce something, because I would want someone to react that way for me. So I carry myself in that way. And it's led to some really great partnerships, friendships, and everything else. Like, now some of my content creator friends and I will reach out to each other about brand deals. We're like, hey, I saw you worked with X company. What was it like to work with them? Would you recommend it? What was your timeline? So we can get all of that help there, because there's really no guidebook to content or brand deals. And it's important to sort of talk with people who get it.
Yeah.
So I felt very supported there. In terms of stand-up, it's a lot of every man for yourself. But if you ask for help, it seems like you will get it. Like, anytime I'm on a show with a comedy veteran, I'll be like, hey, could you watch my set and give me pointers, and, like, really feel free to dig in. They're like, oh yeah, absolutely. Because when they hear, hey, I'm really into comedy and I want to get better, and I appreciate that you are much better at this than I am, and you've been doing it way longer, I know you're going to notice things that I won't notice.
Yeah.
And that can happen at all levels. I mean, one of my friends, he's been doing it about 3 years. He noticed that I was lowering the microphone every time I reached like the end of my joke.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you shouldn't do that because it signals to the crowd like, all right, this is when you should laugh. Like, this is a rehearsed bit rather than this is amusing I'm coming up with right now. Because that's how you want stand-up to feel. You want it to feel like it's a conversation that's only happening in that moment, that it's not jokes, especially right. in the way that a lot of us tell comedy, which is just stories or funny things that happen to us.
Yeah.
It's small things like that I never would have noticed. Like, but it's asking people for that feedback, that help, where you'll get it. So it's not, you're not going to get people being like, hey, can I help you in your career? No, they'll be like, that was a good set. And then you got to really ask, but was it? Can you give me some feedback?
Are there real conversations that are happening about, you know, low confidence or insecurities or, you know, vulnerable moments? Is that part of the conversation in that community? Because I'm trying to, you know, if I make the parallel with the corporate world, it doesn't happen that often, right? Like, sure, you'll have a group of you know, young professionals that might get together and they're like, whoa, that was a rough day. And like, I felt really shaken here or whatnot. But in my experience and having been like a young professional and now like being a little bit more mature and being much more in a supportive role for professionals, like, it's just not clear to me that we're really having those conversations and having like that peer-to-peer support. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast, right? So that we just normalize the conversation. So I'm curious, like, do you all talk about that in your world? And help each other out on insecurities and imposter syndrome?
It's so tough because a lot of the insecurities you just have to plow through. Like, that's the only way to get better at comedy. Like, if you're saying to yourself, am I good enough? Am I, you know, funny enough? They'll be like, keep going to mics. Like, keep powering through that feeling, because the only way to get better is to do this. You can read all the books you want about stand-up and joke writing, but until you actually perform, it's for nothing. So sometimes when you start, you know, lamenting about comedy to a veteran, they'll be like, get up, go do it more. Like, that's all you can really do. So a lot of the imposter syndrome is met with people saying, then go do it more. If you don't feel like you're very good at this thing, or you feel like you're, you know, spinning out a little too quickly, do it more. Write more jokes, try some more stuff out. And like, yeah, you're right. That's the only way to really combat imposter syndrome in comedy, is to just do it more. So then you can say, oh no, I'm an expert here because I've done it for this long. Like, there's no class you got to graduate, or, you know, theorem you have to prove. It's just getting out there and doing it. Like, when I hear a comedian's been performing for 10 years, I don't ask, well, where did they graduate from? What schools have they performed in? I'm like, oh no, 10 years is a long time to be doing anything.
Yeah.
That's how they say to combat it. And, you know, we'll commiserate with each other if we don't get selected for the same festivals. Like, I didn't get into Boston Comedy Festival this year, and same with some of my friends, but we just got to brush off and be like, all right, like, that sucks this year, but we're going to try again next year.
Yeah. So it's constant exposure to moments that can feel super, super hard, and that's how you get better.
Exactly. And even getting selected for like a Tuesday showcase show at a free bar, sometimes bookers don't book certain people just because they're not their cup of tea in terms of humor. Like, even as I book shows now for Comedy Coop, I try to lean towards comics who are less crass, just because that's not my style of comedy and I don't think it's as funny. Right. And I notice myself having that implicit decision of, all right, I want to find someone who isn't going to do so many sex jokes on stage, or jokes about, I don't know, like, racial tension or whatever. I'm like, all right, I, you know, that's not my style of comedy. I'm going to try to make my shows look more like humor that I enjoy, rather than getting a totally wide range of comedy acts.
Yeah.
And it's a tough thing to hear from other people, but when you're booking your own shows, you're like, oh yeah, well, that makes sense. Like, I enjoy that person's humor more than that person's humor, so I book them. It's,
yeah.
But it's incredibly hard to be like, what do you mean I'm not your cup of tea?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Like, that's so personal, right?
Yeah, you're like, what do you mean? You mean I'm not good? And they're like, no, I just don't like your stuff. You're like, that means you don't think I'm good.
You don't like me.
Yeah.
What are some of the conversations that you have with yourself, or like, what's that voice inside your head when you're experiencing a moment that's not so hot, right? Or like, you know, you don't get the booking, or your video flops, or whatnot. What is that voice?
The voice is just saying, get the next one. Like, get the next one, because that's the only way to keep going, is to think, all right, I didn't have it this time, but if I end here, what a terrible note that would be to end on. So, like, even last weekend, I went down to Hartford, Connecticut, a 90-minute drive to do a set on Friday and Saturday at the same club. The Friday one went pretty good, got a lot of laughs, you know, felt good to be on stage for 25 minutes. And then I get back there on Saturday, I do the same shtick and crickets the whole way through. I'm like, that absolutely sucked. And it wasn't the crowd, because they were laughing for the headliner right after me. I'm like, ooh, I just was bad, or my humor wasn't for them. And now I got to think, all right, I've got a Comedy Coupe show on Friday. Let's show out there. Let's prove to myself and everyone else that, like, these jokes work and that I can be funny.
Yeah.
That little voice is just saying, go get the next one, because
yeah.
There was a quote I saw at one point, you're never gonna achieve it, and ask yourself, was all of that effort worth it?
What does that tell you?
To keep going.
Don't give up.
Yeah, it's basically don't give up, because I don't know, I look at Nate Bargatze. He just had a show at TD Garden in front of 19,000 people. Do you think he's like, wow, I'm really upset that I went to that one open mic at 11 p.m. on a Tuesday and stayed up until 1 to get my 4 minutes? No, he's like, that made me good enough to get here, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't change the end result, therefore I can't change the process.
Yeah. And tell me, Joe, in your case, are there any, like, physical manifestations or, you know, mental repercussions on you that you're like, whoa, like, this is extra tough, and I, you know, it's so frustrating because you have to work extra hard and you have to, yeah, never give up. So, yeah, so I'm curious, right? Because sometimes imposter syndromes can have really negative effects on our physical and mental health.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely sometimes get a little sad. Like, that's part of it, where you just got to be like, all right, let me sit in this moment and feel it, because if I push it away, it'll come back harder. But if I just accept it and move through it and process it, then I can get back out there. So, yeah, you got to deal with the occasional lull in spirit. But I guess sometimes how it could manifest physically is that you don't go to that open mic and you don't try out a new joke or a new style, and that's not helping anyone. So I've definitely been in positions where I've thought, I just can't do comedy today. Like, I knew I was supposed to do a mic, but then I didn't. And I came up with an excuse, like, oh, well, I should probably film a video and get ahead on content. Or maybe I just need to take, like, a little break. But that, the less you do comedy, the less you are going to do comedy. You know what I mean?
Joe, I'm also super curious. Can you make any parallels between what you're experiencing in the comedy world with your life in the corporate world?
It's so hard to draw parallels, because when you do anything in comedy, it's so explicitly for you. Like, every move you make or video or show you do, there's a direct benefit or cost to your career. But in corporate, it seems like you're working on behalf of someone. Like, I have to make these slides for the partner, or I have to, you know, make this model for my MD. Like, you're doing something for someone, versus in comedy, it's, I need to go do the show so I can get better, so I can, you know.
Yeah.
I leads in comedy versus we leads in corporate, and sometimes it's you leads in corporate. So
gotcha.
It's hard to draw parallels in that regard, but in terms of feeling like you don't belong, it's very easy to think that. There are people who, you know, are running this business who've been doing it 20 years, and it's very easy to think, oh, they know what's best. They know how everything should be run. And it's very easy to also look at comedy and go, oh, this is someone who's been doing this 15 years. These are how jokes should look. Like, this is how comedy should look. I've never seen it done in a different way. But then you see a new unorthodox act come out, and you're like, oh, comedy can be cool if it's done like this. Like, right. Again, Mitch Hedberg, a lot of these weird non sequiturs. I mean, I know there were people like Stephen Wright and many other observationalists before him, but when you see something done well, you can't argue with it. And it's easier to experiment in corporate America. It's easier to experiment in comedy, but not as easy to experiment in corporate because there's so much rigidity and expectation and less creativity, obviously. So
it's really hard to make a parallel between corporate America and you know, the comedy industry in which you're in. And so if I understand correctly, like the, you know, imposter syndromes, low confidence, whatnot, you're not really experiencing that in corporate America.
Yeah, I guess because it's
much less. Yeah, like
I guess because it's not my passion. Like, I'm not striving to be the biggest and best corporate American. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if I mess up or don't know something, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. That's not what I'm pouring all of my effort into. If I was, maybe I'd feel it a little bit harder. But there's definitely moments when, you know, my boss will say to me, hey, can you run this analysis, or we have to look at benchmarks and this, that, or the other thing. And I don't really know what he's talking about, but at least I'm aware that I don't know it, and I feel comfortable to ask. Because you got more experience than me, pal. How do you do this? And sometimes there are questions that I should probably know the answers to, but because I've got my foot in two different camps, I can be like, look, if you think that's dumb, so be it. But we got to figure this out so we can get this job done. And I'm powering through it.
Right. Joe, before we sign off, what would you tell a young comedian who's, you know, younger than you, and who's starting off and who's having these thoughts? And don't tell me that you're going to tell this person to keep on going and just do more. I'm challenging you to think of like an alternative piece of advice that you'd give to a young comedian.
The advice really is do it more. I guess it would be to, I hope this is an acceptable answer, to try something different. Like, if you are struggling to get stand-up going or improv comedy going or whatever it may be, experiment around and like try to make a video. Or if you're musically inclined, try to do something with music comedy. Look for pivots in the same space, I guess, because there are some people who are really good at videos who can't do stand-up, and the opposite is very true. There is a lot of very talented stand-ups who do not know how to write a sketch or produce a video. So
gotcha.
If you want to get involved in comedy,
your advice is basically like, it was very cunning. It's basically just do more, but do it a bit differently.
Yeah, look for different areas, because it's very easy for people to say, I want to be a stand-up, or I want to be X in X field, and then they don't explore all the different areas within it where they might be better.
Right.
Even you could come up with a new thing. Like, there's someone at one point saw stand-up comedy and went, what if I did that with a guitar? And then music comedy was born, you know?
Right.
And all the sort of different spin-offs, like, would Bo Burnham be here if that first person didn't try just telling jokes with a guitar? Who knows? But it's all about seeing something, changing it a little bit, making it your own, and then it's just a continual line of that because you can look at a lot of my videos and go, oh, he's doing something like corporate Natalie or like this person or whoever it may be. And like, yeah, but there's only so many things you can do, but I'm putting my own spin on it. I'm, you know, incorporating things that I like or jokes that I would tell. But yeah, at the end of the day, we're both making jokes about corporate America. There's only so many things to talk about. Right. But I hope the way in which I do it is different enough that shows, all right, he put some thought and some writing and some effort in here.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe, this has been awesome. I'm so glad we got to connect and really, really grateful for everything that you shared with us. And I'm going to keep on following you. I always, like I said, I always have a really good laugh with your content. It's super, super awesome. And who knows, maybe I'll make my way down to Boston and come and see one of your shows.
Hey, if you're ever here, Comedy Coop would love to have you.
Awesome. Have a great day. Talk to you soon.
You too.
Bye.
That's it for this episode of My Imposter Story. Thanks for listening. Much gratitude to my guest, my editor Virage Sonore, and soundtrack composers Collectif Neuf, as well as my graphic designer websites.ca. If you think you might want to share your imposter story, reach out to me on my LinkedIn. I'd love to hear from you. To hear more episodes, you can find them all on your favorite podcast platforms. And if you've enjoyed this episode, pay it forward. Share it with your network, subscribe, and leave a review. À très bientôt.